Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us.
We're going to be talking about raising chickens and what newcomers to raising chickens or ducks or turkeys, flocks, might experience that they just didn't have a sense of. I have with me Karen, who, like myself, got into raising chickens only within the last couple of years, year or two, and had a number of surprises, and an old-timer with a very experienced person, Cliff, from Washington State. Karen's from Ohio. I'm in Wisconsin. And Cliff has had a lot of experience. He's had success with all the things that Karen and I are struggling with. Well, I got into chickens and ducks in the spring of 2003 because here in Wisconsin they have Chick Day, and you can order chickens and ducklings or baby turkeys or whatever for cheap, for like a buck each or something, maybe a buck and a half. And you can specify hens or roosters, male or female. And they pretty much come through that way when hatched. And they give them to you as new hatchlings. On you put your order in 3 weeks later, you get them. So you have to buy them in the spring pretty much, or you don't get a chance. So I said, well, who knows when we're going to have a pole shift? So I put my order in. And one of the first surprises I found was that when they are not being raised by their mothers, hens, you have to teach them how to drink. How odd. But the woman said, when you get home, you take each of these little chicks and each of these little ducklings, and you put their nose in water and give them an opportunity to drink. If you don't do that, they'll sit there and die of thirst, and they won't, even though the water's in front of them. And I thought that was the oddest thing. Cliff, that's not how it is with mother hens and their chicks, is it?
No, not really. Baby chicks are quick to learn from their mothers, almost instinctively, really. I've noticed here that I do have problems with turkeys. They need to be, basically, you need to read the manual to a turkey. That's just how that bird is. But a chick is actually a pretty smart bird in their own way. They learn quite rapidly. In some cases, I haven't even had to, the ones that were raised in the broodery, I didn't have to even teach. They just picked it up somehow from the other chicks.
Yeah, so you'd think that in nature it would have to be that way. Otherwise, how did the original bird from our domesticated bird survive?
Absolutely.
There weren't people running around after them poking their little beaks into water. So that was my biggest surprise. How about you, Karen?
Yes, when I first got my group, I spent a couple hours watching them to make sure, and there was a few that would not. Even though I would put their head in there, they still were reluctant. It took a couple hours till I got every one of them
to drink, and when they drink, they turn their little beaks up. Well, actually getting the baby chicks or brooding the eggs has got a lot of different complications with it. I read all that information about what you do. You get a brooder. You have to keep it at a certain temperature. You have to keep it at a certain humidity. You have to move the eggs around, and all the time having the air sac up and turn the eggs, you know, so that the baby chick doesn't get stuck to the shell. And God forbid, it must come out something like the fly, with the shell being part of its skin or some horrible thing, or have a burst effect of some kind. So you got to roll those eggs and three times a day, and all the temperature and humidity, and it seemed such a nightmare. And I thought, well, after the pole shift, who's going to have the ability to maintain temperature and humidity, you know? And then after they're born, after they hatch, you got to keep it like 80 degrees and very warm, so that they don't get chilled. Normally they'd be under their mother's wings, and worry about all that, teaching them how to drink. And it's so much easier just to, like, let nature take its course, which is what Cliff does, right?
Basically, I do. I'm running a farm, I don't have the time, basically, to run around and take care of the particulars like that. But so a lot of times I just let mom do her job. and mom usually does her job pretty well. In fact, sometimes mom does her job and the neighboring hen's job and everybody else's.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that you said, now, Karen and I have not had success in brooding. I was hoping for it, but I have my hens and ducks not outside where they can get sunlight, but in the basement at the current time, and the light is too dim. I think they were lacking sunlight, and I don't think Karen had success. I'm not sure why, but you didn't get a brooder at all, did you, Karen?
No.
Did you get close to it? Did you see any kind of brooding behavior?
Not at all, not out of any of them.
You know, I had a hen that was sitting a couple times. I said, oh, here we go, and wouldn't get off the nest and kept pulling little pieces of straw around, you know, tucking to make, like, no drafts, you know, like you do in winter when you're pulling the blanket around so that it's heaped around you so there can be no drafts. And I said, here we go. But after a couple of hours, the hen would get off. But I noticed very protective behavior. I would go into their coop, you know, where the eggs were. There'd be one hen that wouldn't want to leave and it would cluck and, you know, get defensive. Cluck, 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 you know, like, get out of here, you know. This is my nest, or warning call. But I did get a brooding duck. I had Peking ducks, and one of my ducks sat on eggs for the full 28 days, and at the end of that time was acting very alarmed and distressed and starting to eat the eggs. And one of them, because I took them away at that time, I figured that they were all cool. One of them did have a form duck pretty close to full term, duckling inside the egg. So I got close with ducks, and from what I understand, the Rhode Island Reds that I have are good mothers, and Peking ducks are not good mothers, so I had kind of the flip. But I have high hopes that if they were outdoors in where there's more sunlight, it's light-dependent, isn't it, Cliff? Isn't it?
Yes, it really is, Nancy, and I have a question for you, as a matter of fact. You said that you had the lights in there, but what the wavelengths were the lights putting out? That's really important. You need a full-spectrum light. Some places don't run full spectrum, but I find that a good mix of a spectrum really makes a difference.
Yeah, actually, it's a very artificial environment, and I'm just so sure this is the problem. I have a sun lamp down there, and it's a full spectrum, but it's such a dim thing. I mean, you know, it's not enough. You'd have to, like, maybe have them right under the lamp, and I don't. You know, they're at a little bit of an arm's length away, and it's just not that bright. It's only supposed to be like a 3-foot square section underneath the lamp that really gets sunlight, and it's not enough. But I do give them vitamin D supplements, you know, because it is an unnatural setting. But
right.
But I'm sure, I'm just sure that if they were outside and they were getting full sunlight, that's another thing I wanted to mention, is that these birds do need sunlight, and they do manufacture their vitamin D apparently from exposure to their skin. I suspect with the chickens, it's the wobble, that red part, you know, the top of the head and hanging down, and maybe their bare legs, who knows. But I noticed that people in the area here who have flocks, they let their chickens out at least once a day. I know Karen does that. They get out and around even in winter, right, Karen?
Right.
Yeah.
They'll jump around, and wherever there's a bare spot, they'll peck around there. But if they'll stay away from the snow. I just let them decide if they want to come out for a while or stay in.
Yeah, yeah. And you let yours out every day, don't you?
Yes.
Do they free range, Cliff?
Yes, they do. I let them out on purpose. That's one of the reasons I have them here, is to keep the bugs under control. In fact, I keep a good mix of banties with my regular breeds, because the banties are just wonderful bug chasers, and they keep the earwigs down and things like that, the grasshoppers. So I let them out every day, and I don't pen them in. They roam the whole farm.
Ah, yeah, and yet they head for the coop at night, right?
Absolutely, that they're wonderful for that. And banties in particular they'll go wild on you if you're not careful, because they'll roost in a tree. Most of the domestic breeds can't fly very well, and so they always go home. If the sun starts going down, by the time it's twilight, they're up on their roost.
Yeah, in their coop. They're actually real creatures of habit. I've noticed that too. It's they want the routine. They know the routine and they want it. And I actually had a couple of chickens a few years back, and gave them to a woman in the area who has an organic egg farm. And she said, now that it's a new environment, and I had never clipped their wings, These were Rhode Island Reds also. She said, I'll keep them in the coop for a couple of days until they know where home is, and then I'll let them out with the other birds to free range during the day. And it was a clue from her that it takes about 2 days for them to say, okay, this is my new coop. And they just automatically go back. Karen has said that they just line up at the door when it's time to go in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. It's unless I'm separating them, and then I have a problem.
Oh, yeah, well, you're trying to keep certain roosters out or something
right.
like that.
And then he'll like, linger and linger.
The rooster that...
The rooster will.
Yeah.
I totally wait till he decides to go in.
Oh, yeah. I have a wonderful rooster. We had real problem with, this was another surprise for me, is how they attack. You know, you see this in the movies. There's a rooster, and it's on the fence, and it's crowing, and it's so idyllic. And they don't crow just once. They just don't crow at dawn. They crow a lot. And I understand they crow because they're happy. They're feeling cocky, actually. You know, they're feeling full of themselves, and they like their environment. And so our rooster will crow if anything is just a little bit off. You know, one of the hens gets out of the coop. I let them out when I feed him and water him at night, and they run around the basement. But if one of them gets out during the day, he crows. You know, he's carrying on about it. It's something different. But anyway, I had four roosters. Because actually two of my hens turned out to be roosters. They try to, when you buy the chicks, you know, you don't always get what you order. And they do try. I think they candle them. And I mean, they put a light behind them, and the rooster or the hen looks different when it's growing in the egg. I'm not sure what the difference is, but they try their best, and so they sort them out. But I got a couple roosters that were supposed to be hens, and then I ordered a couple of more roosters beside, and so I ended up with four roosters and six hens. Well, I said, well, it's nice to have backup. You know, you don't want to just have one rooster. I spared.
Depends on how much sleep you want, Nancy.
Yeah, and they were all crowing. But one day I went in at, you know, very early in the morning, and I was always feeding them in the morning. At that time I had them in the kitchen, you know, because they were just adolescents too young. And I got wanged in the kneecap by an attacking rooster that totally took me by surprise. And did that hurt? Wow. It was like somebody threw a BB or something like that at your kneecap. It hurt for days. Didn't break my kneecap, but then I had to go in with the top of a garbage pail, which I used as a shield, you know, and these roosters would hop up, you know, and they'd get their feathers all fluff around their neck and hop up and try to jump against and it was, so anyway, I put them all in separate cages, and I tried one at a time, and if it didn't work out, I got rid of them, and I had one out of the four that is a complete deer. He doesn't attack people, but he fertilizes eggs. He does his responsibilities. By that I mean they're very, I find male birds to be very good caretakers. I mean, they walk around identifying food, and when the rooster finds food, he goes, quack, 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 you know, and calls the hens and says, here, I found a tasty tibbet. And I've even seen a hen rush up and grab a tasty tibbet out of his mouth. They allow this. And ducks are the same way. The drake will stand and let the female eat all she wants until she's falling over, and then they'll eat, and only then. So they're very good caretakers. So anyway, he does all of those functions, and we have fertilized eggs, and he will not attack people. So I know Karen had a lot of problems with that. Right, Karen?
Yes, and I hate pinning mine up because he is such a good caretaker for the hens. And in fact, when I give him food when he's in his pen, he won't eat it because they're not in there. He'll make that noise to let them know he has something, but because he's not sharing it with them, he won't eat it. So I, you know, after a certain while, when I know my grandbabies aren't going to be around, I'll let him out with them so he doesn't starve to death.
He's really good at
caring for
every
one of them. And that the only thing is, no human can step foot in the yard.
Yeah, he even chases you out of your lounge chair, right?
Yeah, I carry a broom. I started using the trash can lids. I carry a chair. I always have to have something between me and him.
Yeah, well, so how do you get him in at night then?
I wait till he goes in the door, and then I have a little piece of wood that I put in front of it, and then that makes me be able to pass in front of it and put it down. So so I make sure he doesn't come back out and get me.
So he rules the roost, as they say. You ever wonder, notice how many phrases that we use. He rules the roost. What's the pecking order? Oh, you're going to feather your nest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't get your feathers ruffled. Oh, don't crow about it. And how many phrases that we have that indicate how broad raising chickens is. In the old days, everybody had, you know, chickens in a coop, and you had chicken meat and eggs and this kind of thing, and it was like having a pump for water. You know, you had to have your chickens. They've been around a long time.
To tell you the truth, Nancy, the chicken is one of the best domestic animals there is. They're generally self-sustaining, and especially in the summertime. They historically, they provide the best return for meat, and the bonus is the eggs. They actually work as an alarm clock in some cases. I mean, not as an alarm, but just as a plain old alarm, period. A lot of cultures are extremely attached to their chickens, almost on a personal level. The Mexicans are extremely fond of their chickens, and some of them are just like family members. That you get to know your chickens after a while. They have personalities, and they're quite an animal, really. They're not stupid. Everybody thinks a chicken is dumb. A chicken is not dumb. They're quite an animal.
Yeah, well, Karen's going to agree with you. I read that they have an IQ of 12, but they mine have picked up on things. You know, I have one that will come right under my hand looking for a treat. I mean, it's like I could trip over her. She's right under my hand looking up. And I have keywords that I use when I want them to go back in the coop. I say, scooch back in, and they all start heading for the coop, you know. And they do, and Karen has names for her chickens.
When I only had one that I named at first. I named her Gertie because out of everybody, no matter what I put them in, she always found a way to get out. And every time I was cleaning or anything, she'd sit up there and perch up there and just watched everything I did. Well, after I put them out in the pen, it seemed like she was getting pecked on a lot. And then I just felt like they were jealous because I named her. So I had to start giving everybody names, but still they kind of act like they have an attitude with her, but even though the other two know that they have names now too, but she taught everybody how to climb a tree to get over into the woods.
Oh.
But that's the way she's been since she was a chick, always been able to figure out how to get out.
The smartest one, isn't that strange? Well, there is a pecking order, and I've never been able to figure it out, but I will tell you that I've noticed that if we had one hen that sprained her leg, and couldn't get up real well, and boy, she started getting, I have her separated right now, and I don't know if I can ever put her back because of it. She wants to go back so bad, and she can see them, and she wants to be in with the others, but if I put her in, boom, there go. The first, they pick out the head feathers. You know, they pick them out, and it's the pecking order, or sometimes the tail feathers, but really cruel.
Well, actually, you know, it's kind of a safety mechanism. They will kill a disabled chicken. The other hens will kill the bird. And if you want to save it, you need to get it out of there as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Generally, when I get a sick bird, and I haven't caught the bird before it starts to show signs of being sick, they'll kill it. And it's kind of a survival of the fittest thing. It calls the diseased birds out of the flock. It's almost a group safety mechanism in a way.
Yeah, and I've heard that under stress conditions, they'll cannibalize each other, too. You know, if they're too crowded or underfed or that kind of thing. And you're right. It's a natural thing, but it seems cruel to us.
However, Nancy, they will reaccept that particular bird at a later date if you can...
If she's up on her feet.
Yeah, if she's up on her feet. But any bird that other than a limp, I've got birds with limps that manage to get along. But if any bird that appears crippled is in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll bear that in mind. I intend to keep her out plenty, and then I'm going to give it a test run, you know, to see what happens, because they turn pretty quickly. They show. Well, have you ever been able to figure out what the pecking order is about? Because it's definitely there.
Yes, it is there, and sometimes it's not the rooster that's king of the roost.
Right.
I've got a few hens that would like to debate that issue with the rooster, and they do occasionally.
Yeah.
And if the rooster gets in their space, they tune him right up.
Yeah, that's they're very brave. I've seen that. It's usually, there's definitely a dominant hen, right?
There is a dominant hen, and she will basically establish who the other, what the order is for the other hens.
Okay.
she normally doesn't she will defer to the rooster, but a lot of times if he irritates her, she'll pluck his tail feathers for him.
Yeah. Well, Cliff, you've had problems with attacking roosters, right?
It's kind of funny in a way if it didn't scare the heck out of you sometimes. But my banties are the most prone to that. And I tell you what, they will not take no for an answer. They will come at you all day long and into the night. It's just something to watch. They're small, so, you know, you just kind of push them out of your way with your foot. But they can get underneath your feet and trip you over, and it can be a hazard at times. The bigger birds can actually be painful. The turkey, the toms, they are, Nancy, I think I wrote you a letter one time about the tom that we had. My children called it the bad chicken. It's a big old tom turkey, and to them it was a monster chicken. And this thing, you could hit that bird with a telephone pole, and it would shake its head and just keep coming right at you. Mm. And my kids would scream in terror when they were little, run around the house with this turkey chasing them. Gobble, 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 gobble. And around and around they go, and the kids just screaming, Dad, Dad, the bad chicken.
You're right. They don't turn off. They're very, it's territorial. Right, and they're very brave. Well, it's part of their role, and I think I read somewhere recently a battle between a fox and a rooster. And a fox had gotten into the chicken coop, and there was all this squawking and carrying on, and the person who owned them ran out there and saw a fox running off limping and went into the chicken coop, and here was the rooster all full of himself, hopping up and down, and feathers and fur everywhere. But the rooster won. He won.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember the old Foghorn Leghorn cartoons?
Yeah.
Well, there's kind of the germ of truth in those cartoons, and I always enjoy watching them because of that. And I know how chickens are, and I see that the guys who wrote those cartoons actually knew quite a bit about birds. They will take, I've seen them take on hawks. The hawk will come in after some of the pullets, the young birds.
Yeah.
That rooster, he's right over there right now, just dead.
Yeah. Yeah, they have these spikes. You wouldn't want to tussle with a rooster. I wouldn't think. It's like a spur, and when they attack, they raise their feet up so that the spur is leading, and they're kind of landing on you with these spurs. Well, my rooster right now has spurs that are 2 inches long, and they come to a point, and they're like a quarter or 3/8 of an inch thick, and it's all like keratus, you know, like a fingernail or something like that. So it's basically like a big nail, you know, and it's very scary.
You could clip those if they become too dangerous, but they're used. They will kill another rooster with those, especially a strange rooster.
Yeah,
and they can hurt. You know, you don't want to get punctured by one of those.
Yeah, you want a friendly rooster. Well, Karen and I tried to brainstorm why it is that I have a friendly rooster, and maybe you've got some clues in this. But the only thing I could think of was that. You know, from my initial batch, you know, and before I knew, I had a rooster that I purchased separately, and he died immediately, which the people that sold him to me said, well, maybe he didn't get what he needed. In other words, maybe he was 2 days old before he got water or something like that. So then I ordered two more, because I thought I was going to have no roosters, and I raised them separately because they were going to be much smaller than the hens, the pullet hens. And I didn't want them to be henpecked, literally. Whoops, another phrase we get from chickens. So I raised them in a box in the dining room and fussed over them. We would check on them. I would look at them as I cooked supper. I would pick them up and talk to them. And they thought of me as mom, apparently. So when they got big enough, I put them in with the hens, and they were about the same size, so they weren't getting henpecked. But they kept trying to escape from the kitchen, and they would come through the bathroom and the bedroom, and they would go, chip, 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 chip. You know, and I've learned that that is a tone that says, can I join your flock? Because my injured hen is doing that when she wants to get back into the flock, you know?
That's right.
So anyway, they were convinced that the dining room with me was their flock, not the rest of those hens. And I'm suspecting that my friendly rooster that won't attack me no matter what, had never attacked people, may be one of those roosters. Is there any grain of truth in that?
Well, actually, yes, there is. I didn't know if you were asking me or Karen, but there is some truth in that. And in fact, they will identify with their human. They'll follow you around almost like a pet dog in some cases. They have individual personalities, Nancy. People don't realize that. but they really do. And after a while, you'll start to pick that up with the birds. They're really, you know, quite complex.
Yeah. Now, Karen was trying this. How's it coming, Karen? You got a couple of roosters, and you were going to try to hand raise them to see if you could get a gentle rooster out of the bunch, right?
Yes, I got two new roosters, and I'm keeping them in the house with me. And so far, it's been great. They sit up on the edge, and they watch everything I do, and they'll jump down and follow me across the room. So far, it's looking like it's okay.
Yeah, they're definitely identifying with you as mom or the flock leader, and we'll see how it works out. If they get to be maybe 6 months old, and that's when my roosters started attacking me when I went into the kitchen, we'll find out if it works or not. But I know that I've seen on TV prize roosters at a fair, and they were showing this woman saying, well, it was raised in the corner of our backyard, and she's holding it, and she was saying, and it eats out of our hands, and on. Well, the characteristic there was this rooster was raised with people, not with other birds, you know, and it was not an attacking rooster. You could see that one. Yeah. So, Cliff, do you have non-attacking roosters or attacking roosters? I mean, do they differentiate?
Well, normally I keep my rooster number down substantially because I just don't have any real use for roosters other than just one or two around for the normal purposes. So I don't have a lot of them. The ones, actually, I prefer the feisty ones because of my particular situation. Well, you know, you don't want a pacifist rooster confronting an eagle, so.
Oh.
But they don't give me any problem, really, except the banty roosters, especially in the springtime, or if there's another rooster around that they haven't seen before. You know, you have to introduce chickens to each other. You can't just drop a strange chicken into the flock,
right,
or they're all, you know, all creation will break loose. I have to put them in a cage, a small carry cage, and you set them right there in the middle of the coop in the cage for about 3 days and let the other birds get used to them before you let them out. But normally, my roosters don't give me too much trouble, other than the fact that I'd like to remove their larynx. But
yeah, they crow a lot. Yeah, but that's it. They greet the dawn, and they also, I think, do your roosters crow at other times? Because mine will. Yeah, like I said, if something's going on, a lot of noise or something that they're worried about,
they make a special sound. I've gotten to know their language, and they do have a language, as you indicated. I'll be down in the orchard, and they make a certain sound when there's trouble.
Yeah.
Like if a dog shows up or there's some kind of trouble going on, they make a certain sound, and the hens do also. And you know it's time to get up there and get up there fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite distinctive. It's not a crow. They don't crow when they're in trouble. It's a different sound.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And have you ever been attacked by a rooster, and what did you do to fend them off?
I just usually just take my foot and nudge them off to the side, normally it's unless they're really annoying me and I'm trying to do something, they keep jumping on me and spurring me, I'll grab them and put them in a separate cage just to get them out of my way.
Yeah, and you wear boots, right, around the farm? You don't go out there bare-legged?
No. No, absolutely not.
Right, boy, I'm telling you, I never turn my back now, even though I've got this friendly rooster. I'm just on guard, you know, basically. Well, another thing I wanted to mention that was a surprise to me was that all the hens want to lay their eggs in one place. And I thought, you know, you see the movies. Well, I got the movie Chicken Run. And every chicken has its nest, and they all sit in there, and they leave an egg in there. But that's not at all what happens.
Mm-hmm.
They all, and it's so funny. We'll have, out of maybe six hens, I'll have maybe a couple of nests for laying. But one of them will get its, and you'll hear this, bark, 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 bark. And it's not when they've laid an egg, but when they want to lay an egg and somebody's in the laying nest. It's like, I have an appointment right now, and you're in my nest. Get out.
They'll throw them out. They actually throw them out.
Yeah, they do. They chase the one that's in there out.
And she's real upset at that point.
Yeah. So they do. They get very noisy, and they all, and then you tell me, Cliff, you've told me that this is preparatory to brooding, that they all pile their eggs in one nest, and then the main brooding hen will suddenly say, wait, it's time to brood, and sit on the whole batch.
Exactly. In fact, it's kind of, I think it's kind of a good deal for the other hens. You know, they get to have some, one hen will become a brooder, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the same one. There'll be one or two this year and a couple others next year. I've never had all my hens brooding. It's always just a few. But they take all the eggs from the other chickens, and they'll raise that entire brood themselves.
Wow.
Yes. So the other hens will lay the eggs in there, but they get to go off and party and have a good old time while...
Yeah. Where one is more maternal. And I've seen this with ducks. I've seen a pond where wild ducks, you know, were... And it was a very moderate temperature. It was out in California, and they just seemed to never have summer or winter out there. It's always like 60, 70 degrees. And there, one time I noticed that there was a pair of ducks that had 29 ducklings. Now, I was quite sure that she didn't hatch 20. How would she spread her feathers over 29 eggs and keep them all the same temp? So I was talking to the person who was feeding them in her yard, tossing out food, and I said, how did this come? And she said, oh, they're not there. So we've had deaths because the weather was so moderate. The females were always going into breeding and, you know, estrus. And they were, I mean, it was just, they were getting gangbanged all the time, you know. And ducks will grab the female by the neck. And if you have too many males trying to do that at once, you get a snapped neck. And so they were killing the mothers of these ducklings. And so this mother and father were just adopting them. And they were very experienced. It was fascinating to watch. They had to like come through the brush, across the walkway, go through some more brush down into the water. And there was a rock there at the end of that path. And Daddy would go down and he would stand at that rock and he would stand tall and look to the right and left and he was looking for danger, right? And then the mother, was leading them, you know, and here she'd come with the 29, one after the other, and plunk, plunk, plunk into the water, and then off they'd go with this mass of ducklings. And they raised the whole bunch. And I guess it doesn't matter if they were good parents. They were leading them to food and that type of thing and watching for danger, and it worked.
It's an interesting phenomenon because birds in general seem to have a tendency to do that. There are some kinds of birds, not chickens, but some kinds of birds that will actually lay their eggs in another bird's species, a bird of another species nest, and let them raise the young ones for them.
Yeah, and I've also heard if you have a duck, like people have said, well, Peking ducks don't make good mothers, although I have one that was or was trying to be. And they say, take the duck egg and put it into, like, a Rhode Island Red under one of those hens, or and they'll raise them. They'll raise the duckling. They'll hatch the duckling, and they'll raise the duckling. Yeah, so good thing to bear in mind. They will adopt.
Nancy, I have to tell you this story because what you just reminded me of this. And I have pigeons also, okay? I raised pigeons. My son was actually raising pigeons in the coops right next door, and the chickens and the pigeons mix pretty freely. Well, somehow or another, a chicken egg got into one of the pigeons' nests. I think probably a hen laid it there. And it just was there. The female pigeon was brooding, and she had two eggs of her own. Well, this chicken egg hatched, and I was there when it did. You never saw a more confused look on a pigeon's face in your life. That poor pigeon was the most stunned bird I've ever seen in my life. It was just something to see.
Well, another thing that Karen has noticed in particular is chickens being put off and not laying their eggs so readily. Now, the first year that we had our chickens, you know, and they were young, first year, I was running over with eggs. I didn't know what to do with them all. I was giving them to anybody who even, you know, didn't run away from me, you know, to get rid of all the eggs, and at least one a day, you know, from everybody, three duck eggs a day, and so, boy, that's almost a dozen eggs a day. Who eats that? So I found in the same environment, you know, that they've radically dropped off in their second year, and somewhere on the web I found a graph that showed that in the first year they lay the most, and then they drop almost by half, and it maintained that rate, you know, more or less through, I think they have like a 14-year, something around that. You know, they live at least 10 years, a good laying hen will. So that it's a drop-off. But Karen noticed, if I'm not mistaken, that her chickens virtually stopped laying when she gave some of them away to a neighboring hen keeper. Right, Karen?
Yeah. I was trying to deal with, I was worried about overcrowding this winter. So I wanted to pass a few off to someone else. And then I just noticed that Gertie just totally stopped laying eggs. She keeps getting in the nest like she feels like she needs to, or it's habit, but she never lays an egg.
She stopped because you gave part of the hens away, huh?
So I don't know if that's what affected her, but that's when I noticed she's the only one. that stopped doing that. So I get 2 eggs a day. The other 2 will lay 1 a day. Her, 0.
Isn't that strange? And it's almost like an emotional component, but I would imagine that if they're putting, and the ones that you gave away, the people that got them, they said, oh, your hens are not laying, right?
They're getting, they were laying such large eggs, they were measured 7. I could take a tape measure, and it was 7 around and 7 the top, the width, and the length. It was just unbelievable how big they were.
Wow.
But I think because of the way the 2 I kept, she must have had a friend or she was close to someone that I ended up giving away.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that true, Cliff?
Because they howl around.
Yeah.
Yes, Nancy, you mentioned that there was almost an emotional aspect to this, and I think that there is. I believe strongly that there is an emotional aspect to it. Any kind of interruption or trauma will disrupt egg production. Not to mention the usual length of the day. That has something to do with it as well. Food changes will disrupt egg production. A lack of food will completely halt egg production. It's important to give your birds calcium. The hens need calcium. They usually give oyster shells. But they're very sensitive to things like this. And also, if you do as I do and you let your chickens roam free, all of a sudden you'll go, how come they're not laying eggs? What's going on? You go in there and there's only, you know, a dozen eggs and there should be 2 dozen. And it's like, well, okay, which one of you girls are slacking off? Well, come to find out, they've been laying them underneath the tractor or something.
Right, right.
So for some reason, the one hen will get a wild idea to go lay eggs somewhere else. She just liked that tree over there and she started doing that. So you have to watch for that. But normally speaking, when the dogs have gotten after them before, it upsets them so badly they won't lay for a week.
Yeah, so I would imagine that. I've heard that if they don't get enough feed. I watched a series on TV, and it was about pioneering in Montana, and it was an experiment to take 3 families, and they were interviewed and selected and agreed to this, and the whole series was filmed for TV. And they went to Montana, and they had to build their log cabin homes and milk cows and raise chickens and try to grow, you know, something in the field and get the hay in and basically lessons and to see what maybe our ancestors might have gone through. And about hens, one of them was saying, well, how come I'm not getting eggs? And the conclusion was after a bit that they were being underfed, not enough corn and the like, and so that made the difference, and then they got eggs. But, you know, when they're out in nature, in a closed environment like egg farms or whatever, they give what they call layer mash or starter feed for the babies, and then there's oyster shell for calcium. And then I get, because my birds aren't out in the sunlight, a packet of vitamins, includes vitamin D and all kinds of other stuff, even acidophilus, which aids digestion, things they might encounter normally scratching around in the garden and eating everything else that's in the dirt. But in nature, they get this themselves. I think they get their calcium. I've heard they get their calcium even by eating their own poop, you know, by scratching around, and it's called reuptake.
Yeah, well, that's interesting you say that, because birds, have you ever noticed, I'm sure both you and Karen have noticed, that it's almost impossible to keep their water clean.
Mm-hmm.
It just drives you nuts. But I think that it's on purpose. I think they deliberately foul their water. And it may be that, and it's funny you mention that. I was thinking the other day, you know, I wonder if there's something that they get out of that, because they have to do it, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, there was something about koala bears recently on TV, and how there's an enzyme in the digestive system of the koalas, and the way the mothers give this to their babies is that they feed them their poop. As abhorrent as that sounds, that it works, you know, and as I've heard, you know, well, hens are scratching and pecking at everything in the ground, and they eat a tremendous amount of dirt and a tremendous amount of whatever else they do, which is poop, you know.
Yeah.
So they're very clean. I find my ducks to be messy because they just want to throw water around, and they also drink a lot of water, and they poop a lot that's mushy. It's like what you'd expect in a pond, you know, everything melts away. But if they're not in a pond, they're messy. But chickens are very dry. Their poop is very dry. They drink very little water, it seems to me, in comparison. And I'm wondering if maybe they came from an environment that was almost like desert-like.
Well, if I could answer that particular question, I was going to say that they don't drink anywhere near as much water as a duck will, but they always have to have water. A chicken, and most birds, really are very dependent on water. If you'll stress them badly even one day without water, so it's important to keep their water supply current. And watch for a hen that's eating eggs. That's the other thing.
Yeah. You mean that means that they're not getting something they need to eat?
It means two things. It means that number one, they're not getting calcium, so they're eating the eggs to get the calcium. But there's also another thing that occurs. They'll start eating the egg for the calcium, but then they just turn into egg eaters.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do then. It's time for a stew pot.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't stop. It's like a man-eating bear once they get a flesh of man flesh or taste of
man flesh.
And
they'll teach the other birds. They'll teach the other hens.
Yeah. Wow.
You got to get her out of there.
Wow. Well, and I've noticed that water seems more important, and I go down twice a day. I change the water all around because the ducks in particular, if their water is a little dirty or not fresh, you know, that they won't leave you alone. And what they really want is fresh water. Give them fresh water, and then everything's fine. So it seems like ahead of food, water is the priority. Yep.
Watch also, one other thing is that you get mites. Mites are something you really have to watch for. They'll collect if you let too much detritus build up in your coop. Normally, the chickens will keep themselves clean because they go outside. They'll roll in the dust. They love to just roll in dry dirt. And there's a reason for that. It's mite control, fleas and lice. So it pays to check your birds now and then if you have the time, and to dust them with certain kinds of mite powders.
I've seen my hens do that, where they'll get down and they ruffle their feathers out and they scuffle around. They fluff their feathers, and especially if it's in sunlight, they like to do that. It's almost like they're allowing the heat in the air and the sunlight to get in there and maybe clean up some problems. I've never had a problem, but I think maybe it's an instinctive thing on their part. Another thing I've noticed with my birds, and I'm going to ask Karen if she's noticed this also, because I don't think you've clipped your bird's wings, right, Karen? You haven't clipped their wings, right?
I did it once.
You did it once?
Yeah, to keep the rooster in the pen.
Well, and what the heck did you do? I mean, did you, like, when they were little, snip off the ends? Or?
No, my husband knew how to do it. He just pulled the wing out and just snipped straight up. But he was still, even though he had a little wing, he still flew out of there.
Oh, so he broke off the outer part of the wing.
Right.
I mean, there's like a bend in the wing, and he just took off that last piece.
Yeah, he took off all the ends.
Ah.
And he still was able to get out of there.
Yeah, my chickens fly, but they're pretty well fed, and so they don't fly far. They fly up. But one thing I found was that they try to get to the highest place when they're brooding at night. And I had them in the kitchen, and I had places for them to jump up on in the middle of the kitchen and all that, and lots of paper down. And heard this fluttering after the lights were all out, and I went in the kitchen, and there they were all up on the shelf above the sink, and they had knocked everything off, and they were all sitting up on that shelf because it was the highest place in the kitchen that they could go to.
I put a net. I have a net now that's over the whole pen. Like if we're having a really stormy day and it's really windy, I want them all confined so I can know where they're all at.
Yeah.
So that's how I keep them from flying out now.
Well, Cliff, what do you find? I know do you ever have problems with your chickens going off and roosting up in trees other than the banties that you were talking about?
Yeah, mainly banties, Nancy. The domestics are not adventurous at all. They are just creatures of comfort, and they would just as soon be at home at night and on their favorite perch. But the banties are a half-wild bird, and if you give them enough of a chance, they'll go feral on you, and they'll go up in a tree, and you can't ever get them down because they fly quite well.
Yeah, that's what I've heard of somebody saying that their chickens were always roosting up in a tree. They didn't seem to have a coop for them, however, so I think that it was either that or the ground. Although, if a mother is going to, you know, lay eggs and have a nest of nestlings, they do that on the ground. They don't do that up in the tree, right? I mean, they always try to hide their nest in a secluded place.
Very similar to a quail or a pheasant. In fact, I have some pheasants, half-breed chicken pheasants. They will intermix. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Yeah, a pheasant and a chicken will interbreed. In fact, in Spanish, the word for pheasant is field chicken.
Oh.
I have two hens right now that are half pheasant. It's some to see, because they're meaner than the other hens. But they're similar to a pheasant. They nest on the ground, but they will roost in a tree if they get a chance.
Wow, I didn't know that. Well, I know that, you know, in gardening, for instance, carrots and Queen Anne's lace, which is a wild version of carrot, will, you know, cross-pollinate, and there goes your carrots, you know. But I had no idea about chickens. But I do notice that it takes nothing to get my hens and my rooster back into their coop. They like it. They consider it a home. I think the requirements are in a coop is that you have enough room that they can jump around, that they're not real crowded. And I know that my grandparents had a coop, and I've seen some others. They would have like broomsticks that would run across, and the hens or roosters or whatever that were not wanting to nestle and brood would go up, and their claws lock like birds in trees when they sleep, so that they don't, you know, fall off or fall, you know, when they sleep. And they like that. They would just line up on the rungs. But there was always a few nests too, you know, for laying eggs, because a hen won't lay an egg sitting up in a tree. She wants to be nestled in the straw or something like that. And that's about all it takes. But now, how harsh are your winters there in Washington State, Cliff, that it gets cold? I mean, you never have a worry about keeping your coop warm, right?
Well, the birds handle cold, Nancy, better than they handle the heat. We have both hot summers and we can get cold winters. I've seen it 40 below zero here, but that's rare. It does happen. But normally we run in the 0 to 25 degree range during most of the winter. The birds can actually handle that without any protection. You start getting below zero and you need to get a light on in there. Of course, the coop is airtight. I mean, it's windtight stuff, weathertight, so that helps. But they will freeze to death when they start getting down around -5 or so.
Yeah, and I seem to remember that my grandparents did not have any kind of a heating source. They had a wood-burning stove. They also kept pigs down in the lower part of that barn, and the birds were on the second floor. But I could never figure out if the stove was for the pigs or for the chickens or what. But I've heard that even people in Alaska will keep chickens. And the main thing is they generate a lot of heat, you know, and their feathers are fluffy, you know, and so that they can stay warm. But I've heard also that they struggle more from heat. Like if you put a bunch of chickens in a room with closed door and it's 95, 100 degrees in there, that's what kills them. It's the heat more than the
You're
cold.
Dead in a hurry.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's what hurts.
The hay, by the way, is very important. The hay helps keep them warm in the winter. The hay puts out an amazing amount of heat, and then they'll huddle together and they fluff up and trap the air in their feathers, and they survive just like the pheasants do out in the field.
Yeah.
So they're pretty tough, but that heat will kill them.
Yeah. So Karen, what's your coop like? Your husband built a coop for you, didn't he? What did he do? Did he have a design in mind?
My husband and my son worked on it, and I wanted a separate area in case I had to separate anybody from the flock, and for any problem. And then we've got a top portion that they can jump up on, and then where the nests are. But in the winter, and it's all insulated. Mostly the only thing that we had a problem with was when we had a lot of flooding, I noticed we started getting mold out there. And that's the only problem we've had. But they love to get in there and get on top of the boxes. And that's where they roost at night.
Yeah, and is your box about the highest point in that coop?
Yeah, it's at the high point. Because we were having, I didn't realize this, but we started having a problem with mice and rats. Because I would leave the door open during the day. And I just happened to be out there one day, and I just couldn't believe I saw them running in and getting in the food dish and coming out. And so we have had no problem with them this year. I've been more careful about putting the scraps out there and at night making sure they're not laying around. So this year we didn't have that problem.
You know, one time I was giving my chickens anything they wanted to eat, and they just kept eating and eating and eating. And it occurred to me that they may eat as much as you put down and not stop. And I'm not sure. My ducks seem to have like an appetite control, and they'll leave food in their dish. They'll leave grain. But the hens clean everything up right away. So that if I give them, you know, if I want them to eat twice a day, I don't dare give it an all-in-one serving, because then they say, well, where's supper? You know, mm-hmm. You had it at breakfast. Do you think that's true, Cliff, that they don't have an appetite?
Well, yes. What it is, they'll gorge themselves until their craw is completely full, but their metabolism is so high and they process things so fast that within 20 minutes it's like going to a Chinese diner. You're hungry again. And that's the problem, is you can run through a 50-pound sack of cracked corn in a couple of days if you're not careful. So, you know, you just got to ration it out. I usually give my birds just in the summer, I expect them to get out and do their job, so I don't give them a lot of cracked corn, but I give them some in the morning, and I might give them a scoop at nighttime if I'm feeling soft between the ears or something. But normally in the winter I have to, you know, feed them, but I spread it out in the morning and at night. You need to give it to them twice a day.
Yeah, it seems to me that they would just eat anything and go through it. But I also found that you know, I was giving them bugs from the garden, and boy, they are such efficient bug eaters. I had a problem with flies, and here it was my basement, and there was some flies that had hatched someplace where they couldn't get at the little maggots when they were hatching. And I said, oh no, here we go. It's going to be, I'll open the basement door and it'll be, you know, 3,000 flies down here. But I made sure that they could get everywhere where the flies might be laying, you know, like in their poop. Boy, I'm telling you, those flies disappeared almost overnight. There were 300 flies that just disappeared. And I saw one of them land on my shoe and they was gone. These hens are fast. So I pick bugs off in my garden and throw them in a pot, take the pot down, take the lid off in the middle, but they just disappear. They're really fast.
You can go to the store and buy crickets if you want, for like they give for feeding a frog, you know, and let them loose in the hen house. All creation breaks loose. I'll tell you what, yeah. It's a free-for-all.
Yeah, they like doing that, too. It's instinctive. Mm-hmm. But I've found also that we give them all manner of salad foods, you know, like I chop up carrots and cabbage, anything from the garden, like we had a lot of tomatoes this year, any tomato that was a little misshapen or odd, you know, they just love everything, and so do the ducks. You know, they love vegetative matter, and they're not particular. Eat a melon rind out. Karen, you've done a lot of that, right? Giving them scraps?
Yes. I even took them out a whole watermelon one time, and I dropped it, and it rolled and hit one of the hens in the leg. I had to carry her around for a while, but they just love it. It's like it was from a. I had bought it, and it took too long for everybody to eat it, and I said, well, I'm not going to put it to waste. I'm going to take it out and let the hens have it, and they just cleaned it up.
Yeah, yeah. The only caution I would throw it, and I'm not even sure if I have this diagnosis right, but we had a big sack of Wisconsin russet potatoes, and I was giving both the ducks and chickens thin sliced potatoes every day because they were all going to go. You know, we weren't eating them fast enough. And I had one of my ducks was kind of staggering around, and I thought, oh no, and acting blind. And I said, oh no, nightshade poisoning. I finally figured out, and we stopped giving them that. But then later, it occurred to me that it might be something different, because another one of my ducks got wheezy, like asthma, and they were making their grain soupy, because I had the water and the grain next to each other. And then I researched, and it turned out it might be Aspergillus fungus, which grows in wet grain, and said that even wild ducks eating in cornfields where a lot of grain has been spilled and laying around in water will, you know, drop over from this, and it's not fatal, you know, but they get plenty sick, and it'll create like an allergy, an asthma in humans. And I did have a cough, so now I put the grain way over here and the water way over there in the duck pen, and I haven't had any problem with that anymore. So I'm not sure if it was the potatoes or was Aspergillus, but I'm careful with both things. I've heard you should not give too much, like, tomato vines to livestock, because tomato and potato are in the nightshade family, and you can't eat green potatoes either. That'll actually kill people if you eat enough green potatoes. I'm not sure if Cliff might know about this or not, or if it's just still we're just kind of guessing.
Well, yes, they. As a matter of fact, it's funny you mention it. I tenderly planted a bunch of brand new tomato plants this year, and they were gone the next day because I forgot about the chickens getting into them. They plucked them right out of the ground and ate them. They're not good for them. But speaking of health, I did want to mention on the program for everybody that it's important, especially considering the state of the world and who knows how things are going to be tomorrow, that you lay away a supply of antibiotics for your chickens, for your birds. There's several that you can get at the farm store, several different types. And I recommend highly that, I don't know, I imagine you and Karen both have done this, but for the folks out there listening, terramycin soluble powder you can buy at the farm store. It's a must-have for your birds because they will get chicken cholera, bird cholera. They'll get coccidiosis, and they'll start to stagger around, and they'll die in a matter of hours. Sulfamet or sulfamethazine sodium at a 12% solution is added to their drinking water. These are things you need to have, and they will keep forever. I keep a large supply on hand because who knows when you may never be able to get it again.
Wow. Well, you've just convinced me. I'm going off to Farm and Fleet to buy it up.
You and, betcha.
Yeah, because one thing that I consider my flocks to be like a seed flock, just like I collect seed and save seed, you know, if you're looking for a flock and the roads are down and the bridges are down and you can't go and can't order them, maybe it's the wrong time of year even for ordering them because they do seem to produce young in the spring by nature. You're not going to have a flock, and there you are, you know, without the chickens or whatever you might want, turkeys or ducks or whatever. So I consider this my seed stock, and I'm hoping that they reproduce, and they're handy should some things go bad, and I can't get my hands on chicks. And I want everything on hand at least to get a large number and more than one flock in the neighborhood, so that should there be a disease, at least maybe we have one flock that's healthy.
Yes, and you one thing also to watch for is your younger birds will get pneumonia a lot. And without an antibiotic, they're toast. Your young chicks, if they get wet, they will almost always get pneumonia. And without an antibiotic, you might as well just forget. They're done for.
How do you give them that antibiotic? I mean, do you like stuff a little pill in their little beak?
Believe it or not, I do. Yes, I do sometimes. And I was actually quite pleased. The other day I had a bird that was quite ill, and I actually managed to get him to recover. I used to have a real poor success rate with getting sick birds to recover, but if you're vigilant and you keep that antibiotic in them, and you may have to, because what happens, Nancy, is that the bird will, when it gets sick, it shuts down and it will not eat. Sometimes they starve or die of thirst before the disease kills them because they just shut down. And so you have to open that beak and you get sometimes you just drop feed down into their gullet. You can get not a syringe, but a eyedropper, and you shoot water. You have to get that thing down into the gullet past their larynx, past the bronchial tubes, and get it down there, and then you just squirt that in there. And with the antibiotic mixed into it, that's what I like about the sulfamethazine sodium, because it is a liquid anyway. And I'll tell you what, I just give it to them at a straight 12.5%. I don't mix it with the water. I just give it to them straight in an eyedropper, and it shocks the system and brings them out of it.
Good. You know, and it's interesting that you did that, because I've noted that too. My hen that I've taken out because she was getting picked at sprained her leg. She was depressed when that happened. I was not sure if it was because she was in pain or not, but wouldn't drink water, and I used an eyedropper and opened her mouth and put the water in, and you know what they do is they turn their beak up to swallow. Ducks will do that too. They turn their beak up, and then once it was in her mouth, she turned her beak up and sweat. But there was a couple days I was giving her water that way until she got past that point. Yep.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.